Good morning and welcome to Ask the Chief. I'm Richard Day with our guests in the studio for this full hour, Fairfax County Police Chief David Rohr and Prince William County Police Chief Charlie Dean. We're taking your phone calls. Our number is 877-336-1035. You can email questions as well to WTOP.com. And there's our Facebook page, and on Twitter, use the hashtag AskTheChief. Now here's WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chiefs, today we appreciate you both coming in, gentlemen. This is our first time with Northern Virginia Chiefs of Police, so we really appreciate you coming in. The two of you share a border with Prince William and Fairfax counties, and something I'm sure that we all share in common, and that is traffic. Let's start right there, since so many of our listeners are in their cars. We'll start with you, Chief Dean. What does your department do to keep traffic moving, and what can motorists do to help you to keep them getting to and from work on in a timely manner?
Well, of course, we do everything we can to keep the traffic moving, and we have motorcycle officers and other officers in strategic areas trying to make sure that we can get to accident scenes quickly, get the vehicles off the road if they can be moved, or summons the equipment, records, et cetera, to get them off the road as quickly as we can. We've had push bumpers on cars, some of our police cars in the past, but we find it just as effective to get the records there and move them. And as far as citizens are concerned, if it is a minor fender bender type accident, it's important to get it off the road from a standpoint of keeping the traffic moving, and also from a safety standpoint. You know, with the volume of traffic we have and the speeds involved often, it's the safest thing that citizens can do is get out of that roadway, get on the other side of the barrier wall or whatever, but get those vehicles out of the road if you can.
Chief Rohr, is it traffic accidents? Is that what mucks things up for us in the morning and the evenings, or are there other factors at play here? I know, obviously, when we have road work out there, that can throw a monkey wrench into traffic.
Yeah, there's just so much traffic, it's hard. I mean, it only takes one incident, one accident, obviously, to back the roads up. If people would also learn alternate routes, everybody seems to know one route, one way to go. And when that gets messed up, they tend to just stop and not know where to go. So if they can learn a different route, listen to the radio, we try and push out information as fast as we can. Just like Chief Dean mentioned, same way in Fairfax, we try and clear the road as fast as we can. Our close partner is VDOT in Virginia. We have an information center. We co-host with them on West Ox Road. We get information, we push it out as fast as we can. But
let me ask you about the impact of BRAC, the realignment of some of the military bases, and how that's impacted traffic. We'll stay in Fairfax County. How is that impacting traffic in your jurisdiction?
Well, it's certainly impacting traffic. There's no way around it. Again, it's sort of a boom or bust. I mean, it's great that we have so many jobs in Fairfax County. We have the job center, obviously, on South County. We have Tyson's Corner. We have Reston. So we're blessed to have so many jobs in Fairfax, of course, and the capacity challenges with the roads. So we just do the best we can. And again, we're blessed to have the jobs. We appreciate that. We do need to have more road capacity, which is a different discussion.
Prince William County must be experiencing the same kind of population growth this whole region is experiencing, and that, I guess, is playing a major role in traffic in Prince William County?
Yes, we have some of the BRAC impacts of BRAC with the Quantico Marine Base increasing some headquarters there for NCIS, for example. But we also have just the overall growth in Prince William and then south of there, which all that comes through Prince William and Fairfax.
We're talking to the Chiefs of Police of Prince William and Fairfax County, Virginia. We'll get to your calls after a look at what's going out on the roads.
Now more of Ask the Chiefs on WTOP with the Police Chiefs of Fairfax and Prince William Counties. Back to your hosts, Mark Seagraves and Richard Day.
We are taking your phone questions at 877-336-1035. You can pose questions at the WTOP Facebook page. And on Twitter, use the hashtag AskTheChief. Mark?
Let me stay in Fairfax County with you first, but an issue I know that both of you share, the whole region shares, and this is the problem with gangs. I think a lot of people know about MS-13 and the Crips and the Bloods. Chief Rohr, you recently had a couple of gang members plead guilty to some sex trafficking. Update us on that, and then just the overall gang problem in your area.
Well, the case you referred to is a very good case, and what's sad that it occurred, obviously, too many victims. But great work by our detectives and a great partnership, actually, with the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office for this case specifically. We received information that a subset of the Crips was trafficking young women. was approaching young women on the street, also using social media, in particular Facebook. I reached out to hundreds of young women, had approached them, had just made direct comments to them, and just very easily, it seems like, recruited them into doing
sex
trafficking.
How old were the victims, these women?
They were underage in many cases, and they ranged probably from 15, 16, 17 years old up through mid-20s. Trafficked in this region, in Fairfax County, in Alexandria, all the way up to Atlantic City. So, you know, obviously, we take gang crime very seriously, but I have to always just note very briefly that gang crime actually is a very low percentage of our overall crime. It's also a social issue, though. And so, but we have our own gang unit, and we have a Northern Virginia Regional Gang Task Force we work very closely with, again, partnering with the FBI, our prosecutors, the U.S. Attorney's Office. So we have taken gangs very seriously in Fairfax County and elsewhere in the region, probably since the late 80s, early 90s.
And over that time or in recent years, are we seeing more gang members in our area, fewer gang members? How is that trending?
I think the numbers stayed fairly consistent in Fairfax. I'll let Chief Dean talk about Prince William. Certainly the main ones you've already talked about, MS-13, we see primarily still. Our job has been to kind of keep them off kilter, so to speak, not let them get organized. At the end of the day, it's also about, to me, community policing. I want our citizens, our residents, to feel safe. And they should not be terrified of gang crime. Most of our gang crime is actually property crime. It's graffiti. And most violent gang crime is usually targeted at other gang members. But it's been very rare instances for Fairfax.
Chief Dean, in Prince William County, what's the situation?
I think that's well described as to the overall regional picture. And similar to what we have in Prince William, we are dealing with the use of the Northern Virginia Gang Task Force, which is a collaboration of all of the Northern Virginia major agencies, which is a very good way of us keeping track of those individuals that are gang members that are moving across the boundaries of the jurisdictions. One of the things we find that with gangs is it's very important that we know who's affiliated with who. So when we have a gang crime and you have a vehicle or you have a nickname or you have a tattoo, our officers and detectives can quickly zero in on who this person's associated with and then work those leads to get back to who did this crime. Sometimes it's a gang-on-gang crime, as Chief Roy mentioned, and they're very difficult cases to make in some ways, but in other ways, we have a leg up, so to speak, because we are so well coordinated in this region. We have a very aggressive anti-gang operation.
Chief Roy?
I just wanted to add, also in Virginia, we have excellent gang laws on the books. The Virginia legislature did a great job over the last 5 or 10 years of giving us some very strong anti-criminal gang acts with many predicate acts laid out. So we've been blessed with that. Also a great tool that we have along with strong prosecutors and courts to take it very seriously.
And that, I think they were started as a result of some incidents in Northern Virginia and pushing by Fairfax and Prince William.
Let me ask you, it's your first time on Ask the Chiefs, but Chief Lanier from D.C. will tell you this is a call that she gets every single month that she comes in, and it was the first tweet we got in. And this is about the use of handheld devices when you're driving, texting, being on the phone. And it's a two-sided question that we get, or as I'll put it to you, and that is, one, what are the laws in your jurisdiction? What are people allowed to do? And then secondly, what about people? We have this one listener who tweeted us saying that his issue is with officers that he sees who are doing the same thing. They're on their phones, they're texting, they're making cell phone calls. We'll start with you, Chief Dean. Let's first address, what is the policy for your officers? Are they allowed to be on their phones?
We discourage officers from using the handheld cell phones. And allow them to use the, or we are more tolerant regarding the use of the speakerphone. But we do not have we have not outlawed the use of cell phones while driving.
For your officers?
For our officers. Officers have to deal with a lot of different communications devices, the radio and the MDCs, et cetera. So they're used to dealing with devices, but it is a very difficult thing for someone to drive and pay attention to the conversation they're on. So we are continuing to look at that, and I anticipate that we'll be prohibiting it over time.
So you think
we just have not done it?
You think at some point you'll issue some kind of directive to your officers prohibiting that? How about you, Chief Rohr?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. It's a great question. And, you know, just like Chief Dean, we have not prohibited the use. The state law actually allows law enforcement officers and many others in the discharge of their official duties to use the equipment. And officers are charged with doing a lot in monitoring calls and responding on calls. And as Chief Dean mentioned, we have computer terminals in the cars, looking at information constantly. But we do talk to them about safety and encourage them not to use particularly texting or handheld devices like cell phones unless they pull over and stop. So we have not prohibited it, but we certainly do a lot of education and awareness for officers so they don't have accidents while driving.
Are you, like Chief Dean, considering the possibility that at some point you may prohibit your officers from texting or using handheld devices?
You know, again, I'm not ready to go that far yet because there are times they're going to have to do things while they're driving. Again, you know, the cars have changed quite a bit since Chief Dean and I began our careers, but there are so many distractors now in the cars. But the information they have at their fingertips and the tools they have at their fingertips while they're responding on serious calls and trying to take actions they have to take, I'm not ready to take away that tool from them, but as long as they do it safely.
And then what is the law in Virginia as far as drivers? Because, you know, everyone in this region probably crosses the state line at least once or twice a day. The laws are different. In Virginia, what is the law, Chief Rohr?
Well, I think it's the same as other states are nearby us. Motorists cannot, you know, text and drive.
Can you read a text in Virginia?
I believe it's you cannot use, you know, the devices while you're driving.
You can't use it. And is it a primary offense? Can you be pulled over for that?
It's a secondary offense like some other offenses in Virginia.
Which means you can't be pulled over solely
Correct.
For that.
Correct.
We are talking with the chiefs of police from Fairfax and Prince William Counties, Virginia. More after a look at traffic and weather.
You're listening to Ask the Chiefs on WTOP with the police chiefs of Fairfax and Prince William Counties. Now back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Richard Day.
You can phone questions to 877-336-1035. You can post questions at the WTOP Facebook page or on Twitter. Use the hashtag Ask the Chief. Back to you, Mark.
And let's get right to the phones. We have Jim is calling. He's calling from Kensington, but he has a regional question for the Chiefs. Go ahead, Chiefs. Jim. Go ahead, Jim. You're on.
Yeah, my question is real quick, and there's a reference to a chase that took place in Montgomery County where four youths were suspected of stealing a car, went down Connecticut Avenue. The Washington Post said they reached speeds of 100. They reached a circle. The attorneys for the one surviving youth says that the car stopped. And then a police car, hit it from behind and forced it into the circle, causing the collision. And now they're suing for, I think it's $10 million. My question to the chiefs is, at what point or how do you instruct your officers to handle these type of chases?
Let's start in Prince William County. Chief Dean, what's your policy on police pursuits?
It's all about risk analysis, and it's an ongoing analysis of the risk of the importance of the case, how violent the case is, for example, what kind of case it is, whether you're going to identify the person later. If you know who it is and it's not a violent case, maybe the pursuit isn't justified at all. It's about the weather condition, road condition, traffic conditions, the continuation of risk assessment. With all those issues in it related to speed, how much speed is involved, where are they going through, is it at school zone times when schools are taken in, all the issues that we know are risks out there, officers need to be thinking about that as they pursue. Supervisors, police supervisors are required to fire up and to listen and to take charge of pursuits. So when I came into this area of law enforcement, many years ago, we're more restrictive today. So it's a balance of risk to the public and the importance of making that apprehension that we do.
Now, you're in a big state, Virginia, in a big area. Are you allowed to cross your officers in Prince William County? Are you allowed to pursue into, say, Fairfax County?
Yes.
And so what about pursuing into the District of Columbia?
We can, but there are restrictions, and I'm not...
So it's easier for you to go from county to county in Virginia, but not as easy once you go into another state.
Yes.
And then let me go to you, Chief Rohr, in Fairfax County. What about the maneuvers? That what the allegations are in this case is that police, in an effort to stop the speeding car from getting away, used what is known as a pit maneuver, and that is when the pursuing police car taps the rear of the suspect vehicle with their bumper in the hopes of sending it into a spin and ending the chase. Are your officers allowed to use such maneuvers?
Yes, our officers are allowed to use that maneuver as long as they have been trained in that and certified in that. So, but it is used, just like Chief Dean said, only in limited situations. It depends on the type of case, what the charges may be in the pursuit, and how safe that maneuver might be. They have to take into consideration that the grade of the road, the speed they're traveling, or the person being pursued is traveling. So a lot of factors go into that decision. But I just want to emphasize, again, for our listeners in Fairfax County, just like Chief Dean, the Fairfax County Police Department has the same kind of rules, restrictions. We tightened our policy probably 8-9 years ago, and there's only certain kinds of crimes that can cross, you know, county lines or state lines for.
So a stolen vehicle in excess of 100 miles an hour through a residential neighborhood, is that something you would discontinue a pursuit?
For a residential neighborhood, I personally would. And the important point that Chief Dean made was that supervisors are required to get on the radio and take charge of that pursuit. So the analysis has to be ongoing. And for someone to be arrested for a stolen car and might get, you know, 6 months in jail, let's say, to me is not worth the risk to other motorists, to pedestrians, and to our officers also. It's a dangerous job. So
let's get another caller. We have Tammy is calling in from Woodbridge. Tammy, you are on with the Fairfax and Prince William County Chiefs. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is actually, I believe it's Prince William County, but it's a traffic question. Down at the intersection of Yates Ford and Davis Ford, if you're familiar, there's an area where the two lanes merge, and we have a lot of vigilantism going on down there. So I was wondering if there was any plan to fix that area, or if it was possible to have more police presence there in the morning. There's been some near-miss accidents, and, you know, there's a lot of frustration down there. I mean, it's happened to me, and I've watched it happen to other people. And that merge lane is for dumping the traffic from Davis Ford. You know, it's very congested in that area.
Chief Dean is shaking his head in the affirmative. You know of this intersection.
I'm familiar with that intersection. It's a wide intersection, and the lanes have been upgraded in recent years, I guess, when that intersection was widened. I'm not familiar with the specifics of what you speak, but I'll have our motorcycle officers come out and observe that intersection and see what we can do. It may be that there's some engineering things that can be done relatively inexpensively to channel those that traffic. But thanks for letting us know.
Let me ask you both about an issue that's in the paper today, and that is the rise of domestic violence incidents as the economy seems to suffer. I'll start with you, Chief Rohr, in Fairfax County. A lot of police departments are reporting that they're seeing an uptick in domestic violence as the economy suffers. Are you seeing that in Fairfax?
Well, fortunately, we're not seeing an uptick. We've been fairly consistent in our numbers, but that means over, you know, roughly 2,500 domestic assaults reported to the Fairfax County Police Department every year. So that's far too many. It's one of my top concerns, and it has been in my almost 8 years now as chief and prior to that. So we have a lot of work to do. I also just mention, you know, one of my other top concerns is, even though we may have, you know, that many cases reported to us, it really is my concern that far too many cases of domestic violence go unreported to us for various reasons. So I encourage anybody being abused or assaulted, you know, they have the right, it's a human right, to me, not just a legal right, to be safe. So if they're being abused, being assaulted, I ask them to call the police so we can make them safe.
Quickly, in Prince William County, are you seeing an uptick at all?
We're not. We're seeing it to be a fairly flat process, flat number of cases being reported, but we respond to a lot of them.
More of your questions for the chiefs of Prince William and Fairfax County after a look at.
Now more of Ask the Chiefs on WTOP with the police chiefs of Fairfax and Prince William counties. Back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Richard Day.
We're taking your questions. Our phone number is 877-336-1035. You can pose questions at the WTOP Facebook or on Twitter using the hashtag AskTheChief. Here's Mark C. Graves.
Chiefs, another question for both of you. I know that state law does not allow you to use photo enforcement for speed cameras. in the state of Virginia. Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell was on this program just a few days ago, and he says he'd like to see that change. He would like to give law enforcement that tool in their tool belt to free up officers to do other police work and to help public safety. I'll start with you, Chief Warren, Fairfax County. Would you like to have photo cameras to enforce speed limits?
I won't be very popular, I know that, because this is not a popular topic, obviously. But without a doubt, from the data that I've seen and the chiefs that I've spoken to that have that tool, it certainly has driven down the amount of speeding on their roadways. And this is all about safety. And, you know, quite frankly, I wish we would have more compliance, more voluntary compliance. Unfortunately, we continue to see far too much speeding on our roadways. And it would be a great tool for us. Again, I won't be chief of the year if I push for that too hard, I know, but it's not popular. But it is certainly a great tool to slow down.
How about in Prince William County, Chief Team? Would you like to see that?
Yes, I'd thoroughly support that. You know, it shouldn't, when those systems are set up, it should not be about money. It should be about using it in strategic areas where we know that we can't control the speed problems. I was in London not long ago, and some of the interstates, they don't call them interstates there, but some of the major highways around the Heathrow Airport are controlled by very well-publicized speed cameras, and it's very effective. I was struck by how people leave distances rather than following too closely, and they don't cut in and out, et cetera. And I think they use a time system, too.
Chief Ford, you want to get back in on this?
Well, I just agree with Chief Dean first that it should be applied strategically, sure, depending on locations analysis. But the other piece of this goes to one of your earlier questions about traffic. Certainly, if we didn't have, you know, cruisers, you know, stopping people on certain roadways at certain times of the day during rush hours, whether AM or PM, that would also help reduce, I think, some of the traffic congestion sometimes. And it's also a much safer tool, again, for officers or state troopers who have to stop motorists for speeding or other infractions on busy roads, whether they be secondary roads or on the beltway, for example. The risks of safety to the officers, to the troopers, or to the motorists who are being pulled over and stopped, this tool would, I think, help enhance safety.
Let me ask you about another tool. I'll ask you, Chief Dean. We're seeing that the use of drones, these unmanned military aircraft, is not limited to the military. And in fact, there are police and other local agencies throughout the country who are using these. You're smiling. Let me ask you, would you like to have a few drones?
We might tell people we have drones, but we don't really have them.
Would you like to have drones? Can you see a use for them for a local police?
I really haven't studied that much, but, you know, when we go to conferences, et cetera, we see all kinds of equipment that's available, and I'm sure they are valuable to some degree, but I don't know the capabilities. Dave, Chief Roy may know better.
How about you, Chief Roy?
Well, I think drones will certainly have a purpose and a reason to be in this region in the coming years. I mean, just from the standpoint of an alternative to spotting traffic and sending information back to our VDOT smart traffic centers and being able to observe, you know, backups and change lights and everything else, there's certainly going to be a reason, I think, for drones in the future.
Let me ask you, stay with you, Chief, for a story that caught a lot of headlines, a story I covered the other day for ABC7, and that is some horses in Herndon were attacked, stabbed really viciously. I mean, deep wounds. These horses are therapy horses. They're used to help autistic children get exercise. What is the latest on that investigation?
Well, I wish I had an update that I could give you. We're investigating that case vigorously. As you said, it really was a tragic attack. Unfortunately, the horses, as I understand, are back in service, so to speak, this morning. But they did suffer some pretty severe wounds. So why someone would do that, I wish I could explain. Whether they were angry at the program or whether they were intoxicated, I really don't know. I don't want to guess at any kind of motive. But
an isolated incident?
It's an isolated incident. And it's right near Frying Pan Park. And as you mentioned, the other part of the story is that it's a program, you know, for disabled adults and children to have a chance to interact and ride the horses. So any information we would love to have. Anybody knows of anybody who may have done this, you know, please call 703-691-2131 or reach out to our Crime Solvers, FairfaxCrimeSolvers.org. We would love to have tips and solve this crime.
Let's get another caller in here. We have James is calling from Culpeper. James, you're on with the Chiefs.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
Morning.
I have a concealed carry permit, and this morning for instance, I was stopped, but I didn't have my weapon on me. And my question is, if I'm stopped and I am in the car and I have a concealed carry permit, is it okay for me to have it on my side, or do I need to have that visible, or while I'm in the car, or does it matter at that point?
Chief Dean?
It doesn't matter. You can have it concealed because that's what you have a permit for. But our advice to you would certainly be to inform the officers at your first opportunity if you're stopped.
And Chief Rohr, let me ask you about this. If somebody has a concealed weapon permit in the state of Virginia, are they restricted at all as to where they can go? Can they go into places that serve alcohol, or can an establishment prohibit them from coming in if they choose to do so?
Yeah, you just answered the question pretty much. There are some places that we can still, the owner of the establishment, or by law, places like bars can ban those. But more and more those exceptions are gone. So just on Chief Steam point, though, if you are carrying and you have a permit and an officer does stop you, interact with you for some reason, please inform the officer for your safety and their safety as well.
And what about if a citizen sees somebody with a concealed weapon? Do you get those kinds of calls that, they don't know if this is a police officer or someone who has a permit? What should the average citizen do if they happen to notice someone who has a gun under their jacket?
Well, I'm going to ask that they call us, because, they don't know who that person might be or why they have it. So let us decide. Let us go out and talk to the person and interact with them, and it'll probably be done very quickly. But any suspicious activity that someone sees, I encourage them to call us.
More of your calls for the Chiefs after a look at traffic and weather.
You're listening to Ask the Chiefs on WTOP with the police chiefs of Fairfax and Prince William counties. Now back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Richard Day.
We continue with Fairfax Chief David Rohr and Prince William Chief Charlie Deed. We're also taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. You can pose questions at the WTOP Facebook page or on Twitter using the hashtag Ask the Chief. Here's Mark C. Graves.
Chief Dean, I know this question was coming. Prince William County has really been in the forefront of the immigration debate across the country, which is now very much centered in Arizona, is in the courts in Arizona. But much of Arizona's law is based on the policy in Prince William County that you've been doing for several years. If you could first quickly explain, what is the policy in Prince William County as far as interacting with illegal immigrants or those you suspect to be illegal immigrants?
Sure. Well, our policy is very simple. We check the immigration status of everyone who's been physically arrested. So,
now that is regardless of the crime, whether it's a violent crime.
Regardless of the crime, regardless of the person's nationality or anything about the person. Anyone who's arrested has their immigration status checked. And I would just say it from a policy standpoint, we focus on individuals who are in the country illegally who have committed crime. So it's real simple. If they haven't been arrested, we're not going out and doing random checks.
What if somebody calls in as either a victim or a witness to a crime? Do you check their status?
I'm glad you asked, because part of our policy is very firmly entrenched with our officers, is that we will check we will protect the status of individuals who are victims of crimes. We protect victims of crimes regardless of their immigration status, and we do not participate in racial profiling.
So you do not check their status or report them if they call in?
Is correct. Victims of crimes do not have their immigration status checked.
And how about just a witness of a crime?
Likewise. We need to have the cooperation of our community. So our program, our immigration enforcement, is focused on individuals who commit crime, who are in the country illegally.
And then if you check their status, you report that and share that information with the federal government?
Yes.
And regardless, again, of what the crime is that they've committed?
Yes. If they are arrested, our officers are mandated to check their immigration status.
And do you have any numbers on how many illegal immigrants that you have captured this way or that have been deported because of this?
Well, of those people that we've checked, we identify about 100 a month, like 1,200 a year on average. I'm not sure the exact number for last year, but it's about that.
And then do you detain them for ICE?
Well, it depends on the magistrate. If the officer's required to check, if he arrests someone, he or she informs the magistrate who sets a bond. And then if they go to jail, the facility, you know, the adult detention center or jail, is informed of that. ICE is informed, and they do what they do. We have no control of that. Some of those people are released on their recognizance by us and by the local authorities and by ICE. And some could be detained until they are convicted and then serve their sentence and then are deported. But we don't control that. We're just an early stage of the process.
And how is this working for your officers on a day-to-day basis? Is this an increased burden on them?
Well, it's certainly increasing work throughout the department. But it's part of our business today. And, you know, we've been doing it long enough that, and it's a simple process. It is a simple policy in that we must check the status of anyone who's physically arrested.
And what about the public and press scrutiny that comes along with being kind of first in the nation and out front on an issue like that? Is that a distraction for you and your department?
It can be, and it certainly was in those first year or two. But we've strived to talk about the fact that the policy we came up with is fair, lawful, and reasonable. It focuses on individuals who commit crimes who are in the country illegally. It protects victims, and like you raised, it protects victims regardless of their immigration status. And,
you know,
does not allow racial profiling.
A lot of people complain that, well, look, this is a deterrent to people to call in and report crimes because they're afraid that if they do, particularly in domestics, and you both
Absolutely.
Talked about the problem with people reporting domestic violence, that, look, if I call the police on this, then, you know, you're going to deport my husband or my son or my uncle. And these guys are the breadwinners for the
Absolutely.
Family.
Absolutely. We've been concerned from the beginning about people who we would characterize as been called silent victims, those that will not call. And I've said thousands of times since this thing started that we're going to protect victims of crimes regardless of their immigration status. And we mean that. And, you know, we've gone through training of our officers and In that training, sometimes you say, well, someone might say, well, what about a gang member who's violent and he's a victim of a crime? Are you going to protect him? Well, for a while, certainly. We're not going to make the immigration status the issue. We're going to investigate the crime regardless of that. And then if someone continues to commit violent acts, or this victim turns criminal again, we're not going to ignore the fact that his immigration status. But we do protect victims of crime regardless of their status, and we encourage them to report.
Chief Rohr, how does the Prince William County policy differ, if at all, from the Fairfax County policy?
Their policy goes a little bit further than ours. We don't ask every single person who we come in contact with or who are arrested, I should say, about their status. You know, the issue, what matters to us is the behaviors. That's what we target. You know, in Fairfax, much like most of this region now, we're 30% or so foreign-born. So to maintain public trust, to maintain cooperation, collaboration, we have to do what we can to have a balanced and reasonable policy. And, of course, no one likes crime, so we have to have information. We have to have the trust of people to call us. I would just mention, I know Secure Communities is one of those programs.
This is the federal program.
It gets a lot of attention. And just like for Chief Dean and for myself, it's administered, you know, not by the police department. It's administered by the corrections or sheriff's offices.
So Fairfax participates in that.
The sheriff's office does, correct. And so and it sounds like a distinction, but the officers don't have a say in that. The officers, it's really transparent to a police officer on the street. Making an arrest, a person goes to the jail, and then the fingerprints are taken and submitted.
So let me ask you quickly, at what point does a Fairfax County police officer check an immigration status?
Only if they have a reason. We're not a sanctuary county either, meaning I've never banned officers from asking those questions. If they have reason to believe or information that the person, you know, may be harming others, maybe a gang recruiter, whatever it might be, our officers are allowed to cooperate and work with ICE. We're not a sanctuary. There's a difference. So we've never banned that. But it's about behaviors. It's not about ethnicity or race. It's about the behaviors.
More of your questions for the Chiefs after a look at traffic and weather on the 8s.
Now more of Ask the Chiefs on WTOP with the police chiefs of Fairfax and Prince William counties. Back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Richard Day.
And now our last segment of Ask the Chief with Fairfax County Chief David Rohr and Prince William County Chief Charlie Dean.
And in keeping with the tradition of Ask the program. The best conversations come during the commercials, and we were all just complaining about allergies in here. Chief Rohr, I'll ask you, you know, when you go in to buy over-the-counter allergy medicine like Allegra D, you actually have to give them ID, and the pharmacists track this information because the drugs in those over-the-counter medications are used to make methamphetamines. And I was asking you if your agency has actually made any arrests as a result of that tracking. You said, in fact, you guys do.
And we have had cases involving that. So really another great tool that we were given, obviously, to limit those precursors, those ingredients that were used in so-called mom-and-pop shops, you know, to make methamphetamine. So we have aggressively tracked that and worked with our pharmacies and many others.
Let me ask you guys both about where you see illegal drug use trending. I'll start with you, Chief Dean. Is it prescription drugs that are the big problem on the streets? Is it marijuana and cocaine? Is it heroin? What is it that you're finding out on the streets
these
days?
Well, we certainly are seeing more prescription drugs being abused. Oxycontin is probably the most frequent flyer. I'm not an expert in that, but that's what we hear about more than any. And these drug take-back programs, or whatever they call, where you can turn in drugs, the DEA has established those programs, I think are very good because many times people are victimized who have gotten accumulated drugs in the house. Someone dies or something, and they have the drugs there, and they can be houses. We've had cases, both of us have had cases where we've had home invasions where people have gone in and stolen the drugs. So it's good to get those things out of drugs out of your home if you don't have them. I'm not suggesting someone's more likely to be robbed, but there are cases where people's legitimate drugs are diverted into illegal use by people that are addicted.
Let me ask you, Chief Rohr, about a problem in the district and Montgomery County that they've seen an uptick in robberies, particularly these snatch and grabs of iPhones and these, you know, iPads and these very desirable, very expensive devices. Chief Lanier was just very successful in getting the telecompanies to start bricking these phones so they can't be used. Are you seeing the same kind of problem with these snatch and grab robberies of high-tech devices like iPhones?
Yeah, we're seeing that, not to the degree of some other jurisdictions. Out of the seven so-called, you know, index crimes that we track, you know, nationally and benchmark, robbery was the one category for us that was up last year compared to the previous year. So we do have some of those robberies. And I just want to commend for a second Chief Lanier for the leadership that she took in that area, kind of making a national campaign out of that, and actually very successful as well.
And you think that that's a tactic that can work as to make them less desirable to thieves?
Oh, without a doubt. So
if you can't resell, there's no value in stealing it. Let me ask you both about your budgets. We talked earlier about the population growth. I'll start with you, Chief Dean. Population's going up. Are your staffing levels keeping pace with the population growth?
Well, we went for 4 years without increasing any staffing, and their population went up over 25,000 during that time. Fortunately, the Board of Supervisors just passed our budget, which will give us 11 additional officers next year. So that's a step in the right direction. So we're moving again in increasing staff because.
But I think you had asked for a few more than just 11.
Yes, I think we should be adding around 25 a year. And just because of the population and the complexity of our work, you know, much of what we do is not just about crime. It's about what we talked about on the first of this program. It was about traffic. It's about the complex crimes. It's, a lot of things.
How about in Fairfax? Are you keeping pace with population growth, sir?
I think we're keeping pace. I mean, certainly we do need – you ask any chief if they need more resources, and they would say yes. You know, we did experience cuts for the last couple of years. You know, we are a very lean organization. Our ratio is about 1.3 officers, you know, per 1,000 residents. Certainly we do have needs. Our elected officials, I commend them. They have challenges, and they've had them for a couple of years now. So I commend the work they've done. I have been talking to them just – not so much about this year, but it really is for me, it's the next couple of years, looking into late 2013, 2014, and beyond. Look at Fairfax. You mentioned BRAC, the growth in South County, Merrifield area, Tyson's Corner area. The Metro is due to open in Tyson's out to Reston in December of 2013. We're going to have needs in the out years.
Let me ask you a final question that is about along technology, and that is about license plate readers. We see a lot more police departments are using these devices, which are able to read and record and track data of license plates going up to like 50 miles an hour. You'll see them on the sides of police cars and on street sweepers in the district. In Fairfax County, Chief Rohr, are you using license plate readers?
Yeah, we're using them. We have been for a couple of years. Most jurisdictions, we have MOUs. It's been a collaborative effort around the region for Maryland, D.C., and Virginia.
How long do you
agencies.
Store the data that you get? Because you know where people are, when they are, where they're going.
We retain it less than a year.
Less than a year?
We understand the issues about privacy. Now, if that doesn't mean we can't flag it and retain it longer if it's part of an investigation, but we do. We do have a date certain, less than a year, that we dump the data.
How about in Prince William
County? Likewise, less than a year.
You keep it for less than a year. And do you find this as a valuable tool?
Yes, it's fascinating. And it has features that will serve us well into the future, you know, for investigations, et cetera.
Chief Rohr?
It's a great tool. I just wonder if you don't mind, I'm sorry, just to correct an answer I gave earlier before I get the phone calls and the emails. on the concealed carry, I mentioned the bars, but the law has changed in that area. You can wear a concealed carry weapon into a bar as long as you're not drinking.
As long as you're not consuming alcohol.
Before I get those calls and emails, I want to correct that answer.
But if an individual bar decided that they didn't want people with carry permits coming in, that's a policy that they can implement themselves.
That's correct.
Fairfax County Chief David Rohr and Prince William Chief Charlie Dean, we appreciate you both coming in. We hope you had a good time and you'll come back and visit us again.
Thank you.
That was an arousing yes, but they're nodding their heads.
Absolutely. Love to come back.
Sort of. Thanks again. And now another look at traffic and weather.